by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass makes heaven a middle of it. Grass makes heaven a middle. We are grass makes heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host.
Charlotte Littlefield. Hello, George.
Yeah, good. How's it going, Charlotte? Everything going all right?
Oh, it's a beautiful fall day up here in Missouri. Yes, it's going great. Thank you.
Okay, we've got one of the finest guests. In fact, he did our introduction for the Secret Truth show, and he's got one of the best speaking voices of all times, and he's the voice of the Secret Truth. Welcome to our program, Bill Kirkpatrick.
Thank you, George. It's great to be here once again to be with you and Charlotte. He's like old times, George.
Yeah, man, the greatest speaking voice. Okay, Bill Kirkpatrick, tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you were born, and just tell our listening voice a little bit, listening audience a little bit about your past.
Well, I was born and raised in Houston, Texas. In 1950, I came into this world and had a great childhood. Growing up in Houston, it was a lot smaller place than it is now and a lot friendlier. It was a whole nother era back in those days and a whole nother world. And I went to Lamar High School, where I was the class clown and had a wonderful time. Me and a fellow named John Allen were class clowns, and we put on a show on in the halls of Lamar High School after lunch for about 5 or 10 minutes, and just had a wonderful time tooling people in the halls of Lamar High School. And then later went to the University of Texas and the University of St. Thomas, and dropped out of school and went to work, and flipped out a couple of times, diagnosed with schizophrenia, and I had my ups and downs with that for a while, and finally decided that I ought to take my medication and stay sane, stay in the real world, and had a illustrious career selling ornamental iron and working in radio, working for different radio stations and doing voiceover work with that, and had a great time doing that.
Okay, you and were
then,
with what? Candlelight?
Moved to Austin, Texas.
Yeah, in Candlelight Radio, you did some work with them. Then you did some work with me, I remember, World Review Commentary. And then you also did the voiceover for our program, The Secret Truth. And we really appreciate that. What did you think about all that, Charlotte?
It's wonderful. He's got a spectacular speaking voice. It's true.
It is. And it hits the point, right to the point. Are you, now we have a site that we put up for you. Okay. It's your voiceover site, and the listening audience can come in there to thesecrettruth.com, and they can click off, and then they can listen to your introductory on that site and then get in touch with you by that site. You know, we'll also put up an email also straight to you also, Bill. Okay. And so we're going to do that. Now we started 13 years ago. Can you remember back that far, okay?
Oh, yeah, sure I can, George. I remember Kirk Wesley is the radio name that I used, on-air
right.
name I used. Doug right. Wesley, the greatest speaking voice the world will never know.
Oh, gosh. Boy, I tell you what, Bill, that brings out some really good memories. You know that? And, boy, we had a good time. We used to drink coffee together here in Austin and have some nice meals together. Now, you're living up in Kerrville, right? You're retired, but you're also available for other voiceover work. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I moved up here about 17 years ago from Austin, and I am retired, but semi-retired, and I am available for different types of voiceover work.
Charlotte, do you remember where we did this recording? I think it was in your home, wasn't it, here in Austin?
Yeah, if my memory serves me correctly, it was, George.
Yeah, I think it was in your home there in North Austin. And then Wes, a friend of ours, came in and actually recorded your voice, I think, Bill. And then he put together some music. We have some music that leads in to this that Sherry Fouché wrote. She wrote a song called Right on Schedule. And we have a helicopter and then that song, and then we can't get to your voiceover and your introduction, and it's really worked out really good. I've had a lot of people that have complimented you on your voice and your voice work, Bill.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate it. It's a God-given thing, a God-given gift that I developed over the years. I took a correspondence course, the Columbia School of Broadcasting course years ago, and developed my voice. But as far as the voice is concerned, that's a God-given thing.
Yeah, we're opening up this first hour tonight for this weekend broadcast with you, and we wanted to get you out there so that we could, you know, learn a little bit about you and where you're living now, so our listening audience is always asked questions about that, but now they can listen to this and get a real good definitive answers on what you're doing and where you're living and so on and so forth. How else is everything going up there? Are you in pretty good shape still?
Well, I'm pulling my own, George. I'm 68, almost 69 years old. I'll be 69 the 15th of this month.
Okay.
And I had some setbacks physically, but I'm doing fine now and just living the life up here in Kerrville and doing fine. And I live in an assisted living home, and they take good care of me here. I just take it easy, and things are going good here in Kerrville.
Well, now you have one brother, and I think you had a sister that passed away years ago, and then your mother is gone too, I think. So they're just the only relative now, close relative, is your brother. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. He lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with his wife. And I talk to him about once a month on the telephone, and he's doing fine.
Right. Didn't you go to junior high school with one of the ZZ Tops down there in Houston?
Yes, I went to I grew up elementary school and then junior high school with Billy Gibbons, lead singer and lead guitar player and the writer of most of ZZ Top's music, Billy Gibbons with ZZ Top.
Right.
Fine fella.
Oh, really? Okay. So you had some...
Fine.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
But he was a fine fella, a real nice fella, very creative, and pleasure to know, good man.
You know, Clinton Black, who's a country music star, a friend of mine was doing some management work for him, and he gave him the best advice he could. He said, you go get ZZ Top's manager and listen to what he has to say. And I believe he did that. Clinton Black did and became a moderately successful, pretty big in country music. So, whoever managed ZZ Top's was the manager of also Clint Black, I believe. So Clint Black, I believe he goes by. So that worked out pretty good. Anything else you have to tell our listening audience before we sign off on this interview?
Well, I'd just like to say one thing. Dibble swivel de bonton with a half-cracked swip tart. Bibbidi bip, bibbidi bark, bibbidi beach, boosh, good burn shirt. Yes!
Okay.
That'll do it, George.
Okay, Bill. We certainly appreciate the greatest speaking voice. Isn't that right, Charlotte? Huh?
That was very unique. Yeah, that was very unique, Bill.
We certainly appreciate that. Bill Kirkpatrick, thank you for being with us this evening. And, boy, you're the best in my book, okay?
Thank you, George. Charlotte, good to talk to you, sweetheart. And remember, this is the secret truth. The greatest speaking voice the world will never know.
Okay.
Stay talking to you, George. Okay. Charlotte, take care.
Okay. Well, thank
you
very
much. See you next time.
See you, Bill. Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Well, Charlotte, that was good to have him on. You know that? And I just wanted to reiterate again for our listening audience that Right on Schedule is the song that begins our program every Saturday night. And it was a song written by Sherry Frischet. And we hope to have her on possibly later or on another program. And so we'll find out later this evening. But anyway, we're moving to some of our current news now. And then we'll also discuss some other items as they come up. But Charlotte, you know, the banks are having trouble right now, and there have been some recent funding of the banks. Have you been keeping track of some of that?
No, not entirely, but I'd love to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, anyway, what's happened is three to four weeks ago, there was a banking problem, a repo problem, okay? And that repo problem originated in the repo market, which is where banks are lending and borrowing from one another overnight. And I believe the retail, the repo market is all of a sudden it hit 10%, and the Fed called an emergency meeting and they funded immediately $70 to $80 billion into the repo market. And now there's just a recent article in Wall Street Journal that came out yesterday, and the Fed is continuing to fund the repo market, and they're buying federal securities also. So this doesn't bode well for the banking sector at this time, and I just wanted to put that up front after we finished our interview with Bill Kirkpatrick, because it's really on fire right now, that news, and it's breaking news, and no one is covering it, you know, like they should. Charlotte, you came up earlier this week with some information about John Taylor Gatto. Didn't you interview him a while back? He just passed away, by the way.
Yeah, it seems to me I did interview him, but I don't have the interview anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, he was an educator in New York City, and I believe 3 years in a row he was Teacher of the Year in New York, and then I think later on, several years later, he became Teacher of the Year for the state, for New York State, you know. But I think much of his work revolved around that he saw the schools had fallen down in their teaching. There was not enough disciplinary actions to keep the kids under control, and the children, it was just like chaos going in there every day. And he was trying to educate, and he did reach the, you know, the top of his you know, education ladder there in New York City. And so what were your feelings, or what were your impressions, Charlotte?
Oh, he was a very outrageously opinionated, courageous teacher who did the best he could and was rewarded for that and was acknowledged before. You know, he was kind of a legend when he was still alive.
Right, right. Now, you also interviewed a while back, Charlotte Iserby, right? And I think she wrote The Deliberate.
So did we, didn't we?
What? Yeah. She wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. What were some of your ideas or impressions from her work, that interview?
Well, she had some congressional testimony that she bought and paid for, that she was guarding.
Right.
That it was research for her book, I think.
Right. And one of the things I noticed in her book, too, she talked about the Prussian model, see? And I believe that had to do with the French, when they moved through Prussia and those principalities moving into Russia to go against Russian, just much like they did in the World War II. But this was with the Germans did it back then. But anyway, when the French came through and then they finally were pushed back by the Russians and had to come back into France, then were defeated at Waterloo. The Prussians began to say, hey, we need to pull together these Prussian principalities with a national education system. And I think what they did was they started conditioning even farm boys, you know, at the end of a bayonet, they had to go to school and it's mandatory. And what they did is they conditioned these farm boys and all the Prussian citizens into citizen soldiers that would die for the country. And I think that Prussian model moved to America years later. And so that's actually the beginning of the public schools, was based upon that Prussian model. And thus we're, you know, we've got a certain amount of brainwashing in our schools, in our public schools. That's why I think these private schools are catching on. What do you think, Sharna?
Well, I haven't given it much thought to be that much of an opinion on it. Sorry.
Well, anyway, these private schools are really there's people that are doing homeschooling, and then there's private schools that are already out there based upon most of the time religions and so forth. What kind of guest do you remember the most, Charlotte? I put together a list, but what do you think were some of the most interesting guests we've had over the years?
Well, I thought Eugene Malove was interesting. Eugene Malove had just been murdered, and we interviewed Tom, I can't remember his name, George, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Valone?
Thomas Valone.
Yeah, Provolone or something like that. Yeah, not Provolone, but...
Thomas Valone, yeah, I believe, what's his name. Okay, so, and he had a lot to do with copyrights and things like that, I know. But the others, we got into some of our first shows were like Roy Masters, Institute for Human Understanding. And he was quite good. And then Vicki Karp, you remember her on that book called Hacked? Remember that?
Yeah, Hacked, High-Tech Election Theft in America, I sure do.
Yeah, and that was really, that exposed, there were 11 different white papers, I think, she and her co-author put together and collated that stuff together and came up with some very, very interesting interesting book at that time. And it was just fascinating what they came up with. And then later on, we would begin to see, Charlotte and I supported the Ron Paul efforts for presidential elections. And we did what? We did three in the Fed rallies in front of the Fed in Houston. What were your ideas and comments on that, Charlotte?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about the Federal Reserve. I learned a lot about protesting. I learned a lot about presentation, and I'll never forget the police officers on horseback.
Right, and they were lined up in front of the Federal Reserve in Houston, across from the park there. They thought there were rumors that we were going to rush the Federal Reserve and tear it down or burn it or something like that, but that would never happen, not being Ron Paul supporters. And then, of course, Ron Paul went on, you know, nationwide in 2008 and then 2012. But because of his stance against the Federal Reserve, which is a very powerful institution, privately owned, they closed the door on him. They would never let him into the White House, the powers that be, the deep state, you could say. Well, have you been keeping track of some of this deep state, Charlotte, a little bit, and what Trump is up against?
Yeah, I try to track it.
What are you coming up with there? What are you seeing? He's really got a formidable opposition, does he? Does he not?
Yeah.
And so he's having a lot of trouble with Congress, and they're ready to impeach him and so forth and so on. But we also, over the years, we interviewed up there in front of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Do you remember that two-hour program up there?
Yeah, I do remember that.
And what did you think about that? Did it sort of was a pretty touching program or what?
Well, it was interesting. There was a lot of representation there.
Yeah, and what like some of the widows and some of the soldiers that fought in Vietnam, is that right?
Yeah, it was very moving.
Yeah, we were out there. We finally, one of the local affiliate stations, television stations, let us tie into their power generation. And we were going to go out there on battery, just battery power with our cameras and stuff like that. And our video production and video and audio production, we just went audio that year, but we were going to go there, you know, we're on battery power to get this thing pulled off. But, we happened to find this affiliate, station. I'm not sure if it was NBC, CBS or ABC, but it was one of those affiliates in Washington DC that allowed us to run about 100 foot or 150 foot worth of, extension. Power cable over to our, we had a table that was interesting that you could fold out. You know what I mean? And so we could fold, but this was on a Sunday. But now before that, we were in the Independence Mall, Charlotte. What, you remember that back in Mon Paul and all those people out there? What were your thoughts there? And you had your youngest daughter with you, did you not?
Yeah, it was awfully cold. That's what I remember.
I mean, it. What was it, like 35, 40 degrees or something like that? Is that what you remember?
I thought it was below freezing.
It was. It could have been. I know little Megan had her mittens on, and there was a beautiful little picture I took from the media riser. You were sitting down there at the table. We had a special table we took on the plane that would actually fold out into and make a very nice picnic table, but we used it, for actually, broadcast purposes. And I know I had problems with Ron Paul's, campaign staff. They wanted to go out to Valley Forge with this, rally, but I forced them with other people back to the Independence Mall, and that's where it ended up at. But that was quite interesting. Another thing here just lately is that we've had Roger Stone that has been under indictment and prosecution and trial right now. He's in a trial, and he's been placed under a gag order. And last week we played almost his whole interview that he had with Alex Jones here in Austin. But Roger Stone is one of the personal friends of President Trump. He's in trial now on some criminal charges, and we hope the best for him. We pray that, you know, for his eventual win in this trial and that he's engaged in. So, getting back to Sherry Prusay, Charlotte, when we were recording some of this, I remember we took a clip of her song called Right on Schedule, and we didn't want to play the whole clip because that, you know, would require more time and so forth. And we wanted to use it as an introductory piece anyway, but then we added a helicopter right at the beginning of that. Okay. And so there's, when you hear our program, The Secret Truth, you'll hear a helicopter flying through, you know, like, coming through coming from a background up to real close and then flying away again to give us some kind of a dimensionality. And then she'll begin to sing. And then after that, Bill Kirkpatrick gives the introduction. But she first did that song in a video that was produced by Mike Hansen back in 2001 called One World. And it showed all of these police and military scenes in that video, that music video. And then Sherry had written that song, you know what I mean, called Right on Schedule for that music video that was produced. But the name of the music video was One World, and you can find that today on the internet. If you go into the internet, you can look that up and find that on the internet. You go to YouTube and put in there One World, Sherry Fouché, and up will pop that particular video and so forth. What all else is going on, Charlotte, in your own world up there? Anything good?
Oh, a lot of good things. The weather is really beautiful today.
Okay, and it's pretty cool up there now, or what?
Yeah, we had some snow yesterday.
Okay.
But it's since melted off.
Right. There's one news item that popped up here recently, and it's about Proposition 47 in California. And what they had done several years ago, I don't know exactly when this law went into effect, but they had taken shoplifting, the amount of shoplifting, and decriminalized it to a degree, made it a misdemeanor, and moved that amount up to $950. So that anyone that had shoplifted for anything below the $950, it was a misdemeanor. If it was over $950, it could be a felony. Well, what happened out in California was shoplifting went way up, and these retail stores started losing even more from shoplifting than they had before. And now they're trying to they're lobbying efforts to bring that amount down and make it, you know, a criminal felony again, but at a lower value. I think they're talking 450. Anything over 450 could be a felony. Anything under 450 could be a misdemeanor again. But man, that's surprising what laws can do, you know, where the laws are changed like that to supposedly go easy on people. But sometimes you just gotta be hard on some of this stuff, you know. Getting back to this Fed, the Wall Street Journal yesterday, today is what they're listing the date of the article. But I think they published it yesterday on the web. But it says here again, let's reiterate this. The New York Fed adds $104.583 billion to the markets. And it goes on to say that the Federal Reserve of New York added $104 billion in temporary liquidity to financial markets Friday, when it also added permanent reserves to expand its balance sheet. Okay, so they not only added reserves to their own balance sheet, but they injected into the market over $104 billion. The Fed took $73 billion of that was securities that they purchased. And the other 13-day repo operation, they funded in the amount of about $31 billion. So it's really... They bought $707.501 billion in treasury bills and repo market. So it's it says now that the Federal's holdings now stand at $4 trillion, according to data released by the Fed on Thursday. So they're beginning this quantitative easing again, which basically is when the Fed starts buying up securities or funding the repo markets to keep these banks liquid. That means we're in really big trouble in the banking sector at this time. And I just don't know where that is going to end up, you know. It's not looking good, Charlotte. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when we get back, let me get back to some other stuff here. Oh, it's really beginning to be interesting, this onslaught now that is against Trump. They're pulling in these whistleblowers, but they're not telling us yet. If you go to Real Clear Politics and to Paul Sperry, S-P-E-R-R-Y. Paul Sperry has written an article in Real Clear Politics just recently, in the last couple of days, and he names the whistleblower. And it's an Italian guy, and he was a CIA. and he was detailed to the White House, and then he came back out of the White House, but he never had personal firsthand knowledge of that phone call. He was relying on four or five or six other people's versions of that one phone call that the president had with Zelensky, the president of the Ukraine. And so the Democrats have come together. They had a vote just yesterday. The vote was to set up rules about how to continue this inquiry. They haven't voted bills of impeachment yet. That would be the step that is done right before they send it over to the Senate. So right now they're being cautious in their, but they're also being very like kangaroo court. Have you heard some of the pronouncements that they're making, Charlotte, out there? I mean, they're saying things like that it's fact, but their opinions that they're expressing. What do you think, Charlotte?
Well, I'm sorry to let you down, but I haven't covered it that close.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, they're beginning to express opinions, but they're phrasing them and putting them out as if they're facts. See, and so it's just getting to be very, very diabolical pronouncements by our Congress and other members, and you know our Republican. And they're in these meetings. These meetings were being held by Adam Schiff behind closed doors in the basement of the Capitol in a special room that was outfitted with special security. And so as a result, you had the Republicans could ask questions, but they couldn't. They were muzzled. And there was, after they left those meetings, they couldn't pronounce what had happened inside those meetings. And just recently on Thursday, Adam Schiff actually interrupted one of the questioners, which was Republican, and directed the witness not to answer a question, which was directly put to the witness by a Republican representative. So now Adam Schiff is interfering directly with the questions coming from the Republicans. So it's not looking good. It's getting even worse in their pronouncements and so forth. And the smugglers down there on the border are sawing through the wall, they're saying. You know, that just came out on Trump today. And Hillary is still appearing on these different meetings and so forth, and putting out some very derogatory things on Trump. The debt right now, our debt has surpassed $23 trillion. And that's with the Fed pumping up their books. So it looks like we may be headed into another 2008 financial crisis. I mean, for sure, there could be a banking crisis right at our door right now at this time. And, anything else, Charlotte, that you wanted to say right in here right now?
No, I'm enjoying listening. Thank you.
But anyway, Pelosi is out there. They're all talking about, the Democrats are talking about how much they care about the Constitution. And boy, they're saying, oh, we've got to protect the Constitution, and that Trump has violated this and that. And actually, what they've been doing is in these secret behind the door meetings that Adam Schiff had been conducting. Okay, there are precedents not only in the Bill Clinton impeachment proceedings, but you have to go back to Nixon. Now President Nixon did not experience this impeachment process, because what Nixon did was Congress was ready to come against him, okay, with this impeachment process in the House. And before that began to unfold, he went ahead and resigned. And then the vice president, you know, took his position and he moved out of the White House. So he resigned and he was gone. And then the House no longer had a motivation to continue. There's no one there to impeach at that time. So that was dropped because of his resignation. So, but, and then in the Bill Clinton impeachment, there were safeguards set up for the president, and to where he could call witnesses and his representatives in the House. The impeachment process is started in the House of Representatives, and then they hold a series of committee meetings and so forth, normally in the Judiciary Committee. This time, Pelosi put it primarily in the Intelligence Committee, headed up by Adam Schiff. And he's the one that put the secrecy on it and did it behind closed doors, and has not been allowing, during those proceedings, has not allowed the Republicans to call any witnesses or any, and not to, to, and then he's interfering now with questions asked by the Republicans in those particular sessions. So what we're going to do now is that we're going to see some further. They have these procedures now that the House passed, and it was a very partisan vote. Overwhelmingly, the Democrats passed these proceedings in the House to proceed with this impeachment process. And the Republicans voted against it because it did not provide safeguards for the president and did not give the Republicans equal rights in questioning. Now, in the past, you've seen, especially because Bill Clinton was impeached. At that time, the House was careful in giving both sides protections, due process protections, which are not being given today to the Republican House members. And so they have denied up until this time. Now the Democrats are saying, well, we're giving them due process now, but that's not totally true. What they're doing is that due process does not come into play until these existing committees meet, go through all of these witnesses that they have exclusive right to call, and then after that, this information is forwarded over to the Judiciary Committee, and only then does the president's due process come fully into play. But so these committees that are ongoing now, and Adam Schiff's committee is one of them, will continue. Perhaps they're saying it will no longer be behind closed doors, but it will be to the public on television. So that remains to be seen exactly how that's going to be set up. But the Democrats have been creating a total process that they have approved. And so it's not the Republicans right now are saying, hey, this thing is not totally fair still. We still want to have complete ability to call other witnesses that on our side into these committees, and it's still not fair. So this is where we're at right now, Charlotte, and it's not looking very good at this time. And do you have any other comments on any of this right now? What do you think?
No, I'm enjoying listening though. Thank you.
Yeah, but anyway, so right now we're going to see. These committees that have already been set up to continue calling witnesses into those committees hearings, and they're saying now that will be televised. I assume that will be in C-SPAN. And then when they go public like this, it's hard for them to deny the Republicans in questioning these witnesses. So that will probably be forced by going public, that at least the Republicans will have equal questioning. They will still not have the power, I think, to call the witnesses that they want in this initial, phase of this impeachment so-called process. So that's what we're beginning to see now. Charlotte, on our second hour tonight, I'm going to be interviewing, Frank Gregory Ford. He had under arrest in 2003 al-Baghdadi, okay? And
really?
Yeah, what happened on that was that Frank was in the Army Intelligence. Actually, he was in the similar agency that I was in, but during that work in Fort Devens, his MOS was transformed from a interception type of MOS to a counterintelligence MOS, and then he finished up his training as a counterintelligence agent in the Army, okay? So in 2003, he went over there to Iraq and was in Samarra, and that's the book that we'll be reviewing on this second hour with him. And Frank Gregory Ford is his name. And he started, he went in Samarra was Nixus point for Saddam Hussein's intelligence operation. Okay. And so, in that operation, some Shiite policemen brought him in someone to question, to interrogate. And that man that they brought in happened to be al-Baghdadi. Okay. And, in his questioning of al-Baghdadi, he bragged about having this woman soldier they had captured, which was Jessica Lynch, that they had captured down in the southern part of Iraq. And, the Iraqi forces had. And he bragged to Frank Gregory Ford that, well, we're going to do all kinds of things to her. And Frank came back with him through the interpreters that they had that everything that you do to that soldier, our soldier, we're going to do to you right now. So you just shut up. And so he shut up, and then he gave information to Frank that was forwarded to his commanders that affected the release of Jessica Lynch. And actually, Jessica Lynch was confined in under guard in a hospital down in southern part of Iraq. And she had broken some bones in the Humvee that she was driving. They were driving one of her compadres there. Fellow soldier turned the Humvee over, and it caused her to have some wounds or some injuries. So when they got her under control, they took her to the hospital to get well. See, so what happened on that was the information that Frank Gregory Ford had gotten from al-Baghdadi was turned over to Army Intelligence, and they forwarded in and set up a special team, special operations. They went in there 3 days later and found her in this hospital. The Iraqis had vacated the immediate area of that hospital, and so they didn't run into any opposition, and so they were able to bring her out safely to safety, and then she healed up later in Army hospitals and so forth. So that's our second hour tonight, and that's going to run about 35 to 40 minutes, and then I'm going to give some other information out at that time. But anyway, he also ran into some major information there that he had uncovered, okay? Samarra, they led him to some of the interpreters had uncovered some information that led him to a cache underneath that was underneath down in the basement there, and he went down and examined this cache, and there was VX gas there, and it had been shipped out of Houston. But anyway, this is just for our listening audience on this first hour. Tune in to our second hour, continue on into that second hour, and you'll be able to listen to that, you know, and go from there. But it's just amazing what he came up with, Frank Gregory Ford came up with, and it just it's eye-opening. They have said today that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. But what Frank was uncovering in that cache down there, in underground cache of weapons cache with VX gas and other things. And he took a bill of lading and took it back to his commanders. And then also, he blew the whistle on Abu Ghraib, which was a prison that, al-Baghdadi was transferred to while he was still there in Samarra. When Frank was still there doing intelligence work, then they transferred al-Baghdadi into this Abu Ghraib prison, which later on had all kinds of problems with there in intimidating some of the soldiers, some of the captive soldiers. What they used was sexual intimidation and used that to break. I think in Copper Green, that was added by a real good article of Seymour Hirsch. You can find that in Wikipedia. Go into Wikipedia and put Copper Green in there, and you'll have an article pop up by Seymour Hirsch, and he talks about the intimidation program that our forces had originated to be used in Abu Ghraib to break those prisoners. And what they did there was they used sexual intimidation tactics, and that was what they found was the most effective way to break the Arab soldiers there, the Iraqi soldiers, into talking and so forth. And so that went on. And what happened was that, Frank, our intelligence army man, uncovered that and blew the whistle on that too. So he blew the whistle on this BX gas and Abu Ghraib. Before you knew it, they strapped him to a gurney and shipped him to Germany into a mental hospital ward, okay, and started adjudging him to be off his rocker so they could discredit what he was saying in this whistleblowing that he was doing. And he still has a case now before the Supreme Court and so forth, but he hasn't resolved the problems that he had in the Army. But anyway, that's coming
that
up.
Sounds,
what's that, Charlotte?
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And I interviewed him. This story first came to my attention about 4 or 5 years ago, okay? And he almost, in this second interview, he almost said exactly what he said on the first interview, because that's the core of the story, see what I mean? But President Trump had he's very audacious and very daring. President Trump is, and he's willing to take risk. He took a lot of risk in going in and getting al-Baghdadi there and finding him. They found out through informers where he was and had a lot of good intelligence from the ground there, human intelligence. And so, but to get across the several hundred miles with eight helicopters with a special team in there, of special forces and rangers. And they did go in. They freed up, the informer, brought him out. They killed a few people and captured some others. And then they did, take care of, al-Baghdadi. And so, he was head of ISIS, al-Baghdadi. And I'm using a shortened, name here, but he had done all kinds of beheadings. And when they went in, what happened, Frank is saying on the second hour that when they put al-Baghdadi in Abu Ghraib prison, that he started seeing and reacting to that intimidation they were doing, and that's when he began to formulate this ISIS group, see. And then he was released. We don't know. At one time or another, the CIA had connections to al-Baghdadi. And no one knows for sure how long that relationship lasted. Perhaps the CIA released him through the prison to form the ISIS and to cause havoc in areas of Iraq and to take the oil and steal the oil in Iraq and parts of Syria. And that's what ISIS did. And also they injected a lot of confusion, okay, into Syria. And so John McCain was responsible for some of this. There's a photograph with John McCain and al-Baghdadi in the background of that photo. So John McCain, before he passed away, when he was still a senator, he went over there. What they were doing with, there were seven countries that they wanted, Arab countries they wanted to take down. And one of those countries was Libya, which they did. They destroyed that. And that was Hillary and Obama and his team, his administration. And then they tried to go into Egypt and disrupt that with the Muslim Brotherhood, and even elected a Muslim Brotherhood president. But then the military turned against him later, ousted him, put him in prison, and then took back control of Egypt. So they didn't succeed in Egypt. Then they went into Syria, was the next country they went into. And they virtually destroyed the country. And John McCain was helping supply the rebels. And the rebels, part of the rebels was this ISIS group. And they said they were a break off from Al-Qaeda and all this. It's hard to get down to the bottom line on some of this. But anyway, John McCain. Now, let me tell you about John McCain and John Kerry. In 1992, They were sitting on a senatorial committee that was questioning, looking into the POW question. At that time, we estimated, some people estimated, there were 700 to 800 of our prisoners still in Vietnam. They had never been released. Henry Kissinger made a secret deal with the North Vietnamese to pay them $2 or $3 billion for a full release of all our prisoners. Well, Congress never allocated that money, and so many of the prisoners, estimated 700 to 800 prisoners, POW, prisoners of war, were never released by the from North Vietnam, much less Vietnam when they put it back together. The North and the South came together under the communist forces after we pulled out, and the South Vietnamese army faltered and failed. And so after what happened was that these prisoners were still over there. Congress never allocated the money. And then the presidents went one after another, ignored it. Now, I will say this about Reagan. Reagan brought this issue up and tried to do something about these POWs. And that's when this senatorial committee headed up by John Kerry and John McCain was questioning everyone about whether or not there were POWs there and so forth and so on. And there was a book written by An Anonymous Crime by a former representative who went and documented that, yes, those prisoners were still there. He had been advising as a counsel to this special senatorial committee. In 1992, Eric Samuelson and I went out and were at a meeting at Camp Mabry here in Austin, Texas. And Captain Eugene Red McDaniel spoke to us that night on Camp Mabry grounds. And he said he was optimistic. He said next month, John Kerry and John McCain are going to meet and that committee meeting. And they're going to interview some of the remaining witnesses. And after that, he said, there'll be a process, I'm sure, of beginning to bring our POWs home from Vietnam. Finally, we've got two Navy people. They're sitting on a Senate committee. He said they're going to come up with the truth on this and start bringing our POWs home. Well, that next month came. This when Eric and I went out there and listened to Captain Red McDaniel speak, it was August, okay, and he was saying next month, which would be September. Well, September of 1992, that senatorial committee met. They had Kissinger there and some other people, and they swept it under the carpet and came up with, no, there's no more remaining POWs over there. So they completely lied about what the real state of those POWs was. That's why John Kerry and John McCain, they're no good. Why I brought this up, Charlotte, is that this deep state is so much more evil and despicable than I think even Trump could have ever imagined. You know what I mean? What do you think, Charlotte?
Well, it is evil.
And I don't think the public out there really understands the depth of what is up against Trump. Because the previous administration, Obama and them, they started weaponizing the intelligence agencies against Trump, and then that carried on after Trump went into office. So Trump has been up against a weaponized intelligence agencies and all those other colleagues of that movement. They spied on him, they recorded him, and everything else over these last nearly 3 years that he's been in office. So he'll have been in office coming January. It's 2 years and 8-9 months now. So about 2 years and 8-9 months he's been in office. So they created a spy network, and it was headed up by some of the intelligence agencies. They had a bunch of holdovers from the Barack Obama administration and Hillary's people, all her followers and supporters. They put all that together, and they have been after Trump since he took office and was sworn in. And why one of the reasons why they've been hateful against him is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. On the first day he was president at the inauguration, he went back to the White House, and I think he signed executive order to shut that down. And that was one of their really big institutions they wanted to put into effect. But anyway, we're coming to the end. We've got, Charlie, any last comments you'd like to make? We've got about 40 seconds left. What do you think?
No, thanks for letting me join you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, and anyway, we had Bill Kirkpatrick, the voice of the Secret Truth, on there. We talked a little reminiscing of what went on in some of our guests over the years. We brought up a little current, you know, information here. And we're just trying to do the right thing here on this program. And so, you know, this is all we can do. Well, Charlotte, thanks for being with us this evening. And we'll be back in touch on the next week program, okay? Okay. Good night, Charlotte.
All right, thanks for having me, Jordan.
Yeah, God Bye-bye. Bless our listening audience, and good night to everyone. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
This is George Butler, and I just want to make some closing comments to this program that we just concluded with Bill Kirkpatrick, and Charlotte and I reminisced a little bit and so forth. Anyway, I want to thank everybody again for listening to our program. And I closed with this program with a little bit, I expanded on this problem with the POW question, and that's just something that's really burdened me over the years that I just could not imagine until I started getting into it, the way that our government has been mistreating our POWs. And they just left and abandoned hundreds of POWs over in Vietnam. And it was inexcusable what they did. And it was over because they didn't want to try to ask Congress one way or another. What happened was, they were beginning to establish trade ties with Vietnam. And so these big business people didn't want to upset those trade agreements with Vietnam. And they were getting cheap labor also on some of the production of goods and services out of Vietnam. So these big international businesses did not want the Vietnamese under any kind of scrutiny and attacked by the United States about not having released those POWs. And so as a result, they just took and threw those POWs away. There were all kinds of groups that combined and helped Captain Red McDaniel, Captain Eugene Red McDaniel, try to achieve some release along the ways of those prisoners. But time and time again, Congress, the intelligence services, and so forth, put a lid on things, did not tell the truth on this, and lied profusely. Anyway, it got to be really a problem, and it just didn't work out right. The men were left behind. Most of them probably have died by now, and I think that's what they counted on doing. It's just not right. And that's why Rolling Thunder was organized, to tell you the truth. And so right now, we're just doing these programs trying to get the truth out there. And that's all we can do. But thank you for listening again. And God bless each and every one of you out there in radio land. And we certainly value every life is precious in this world.